Hello and welcome to another episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. On today's episode, we delve into one of the most remarkable language learning stories I've ever come across. It's the story of Will Hart, a 20-year-old medical student who on the eve of the first UK lockdown had never been to a Chinese-speaking country, had no Chinese family, and had never had any meaningful contact with the language in any form. Fast forward then 12 months and he posted a video to YouTube speaking with the kind of fluency that many people fail to reach after more than a decade speaking the language, learning the language. Recently, a second video then appeared in which he was interviewed at length at the 1.5 year mark. And watching that video, I was just astonished at how fast he'd progressed. So I decided to invite him on the podcast to see what we could learn from his methods. And in the interview, I think there are three aspects of his story which I think merit close attention from anybody who's trying to replicate Will's speed of progress. So the first one is his meticulous attention to phonetics. So unlike many learners, what you'll learn from Will is that he took tones seriously from the beginning and he made sure to internalise them from the start. And he also studied the international phonetics alphabet and charts marking tongue positions to make sure he was pronouncing things correctly, though he didn't mention that until after the interview was over. The second point to pay close attention to when listening to his story is that Will had, from the beginning, an efficient and consistent learning strategy. So he always approached the task of learning Chinese on the assumption that he would fail to retain any of the information the first time around. Finally, his social life also played a huge role in his learning. At the time I interviewed him, he told me he had not spoken English for several days. Most of his friends are Chinese, as is his girlfriend, and they've supported him from the start. Before we go into the interview, please let me remind you, if you like this podcast, please subscribe on Apple or Spotify and leave a review. You can also subscribe via email on imlearningmandarin.com to have new blogs and podcasts pinged straight to your email. So without further ado, here is my interview with Will Hart. Okay, so Will, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Misha. Thank you so much for having me.
So I wanted to get you on this podcast because, as I mentioned to you earlier before we started recording, I came across a video of you speaking Chinese a few months ago and then another one of you speaking Chinese more recently. And I was completely blown away in the sense that you've only been learning Chinese for around, coming up to 2 years, around 1.5 years when the videos were made, as I understand it. But the level of the Chinese that you'd managed to reach during that time period is sort of beyond anything that I've kind of encountered before. And so I thought it would be really important to pick your brains about like how you managed to do this and how what we can get from your story that could help other learners, and including myself. And the first thing I wanted to ask you then is, why did you start learning Chinese?
Okay, yeah, I get asked this question quite a bit, especially when I meet new Chinese friends. I think it was like in lockdown, I just finished like my A-levels and the exams were done and everything, and I didn't really have much to do. And I really wanted to like learn a language because I'd kind of failed at Spanish, which I can get into a bit later, like how I managed to not do very well in learning Spanish after doing that for so many years. And then I just really wanted to try and like prove to myself, no, Will, you can learn a language. And I just gave it a go. I just tried, at the time I was like trying to study Spanish. I gave that a go again. I tried Chinese and then I tried like a bit of Koine Greek, which is like the Greek of the New Testament and the Bible, because I was interested in that. So then I just found that Chinese was my favourite one. I just loved it. I just really liked like the challenge of it with like the tones, etc. And I liked that grammar perhaps wasn't like, I wasn't too keen on verb conjugations in Spanish. So having no verb conjugations was nice. And then at the time I had like a friend who he's like Chinese, but he grew up in the UK, called Ryan, and he really wanted to help me. So I was just like, and I just really started enjoying it and just kind of started taking Chinese a bit more seriously. And yeah, just went from there really.
And so when was it that specifically that you had your first exposure to Chinese?
I think it would have been that lockdown. And at the time I was messing around on Duolingo for Spanish, which probably isn't something I recommend, but we'll talk about that in a bit. And I did the same with Chinese, and that was my first exposure to Chinese. And I just thought the characters were really cool and stuff. And I just remember being like, wow, this is such a cool language. Let's give it a go.
And so you were just using Duolingo at first, and how much were you using that every day? So
I think I probably did like an half an hour to an hour of that a day at the most. And then I started realizing like it's not really helping with like my spoken Chinese very much. Realized that one quite quickly. And I like one of the problems I found with it was I just wasn't retaining it. Like you can do on Duolingo, you do like some matching exercises and stuff. But I didn't find that I was retaining the sentences that I was learning very well. And then around that time as well, I just started like my friend, the Chinese friend that I mentioned, he started just speaking to me in Chinese, just to try and help me through that, and just messaging me in Chinese sometimes as well. And at the time it was like really basic stuff, but yeah, I just remember being like, wow, I can use it to communicate, and it's just a great feeling. And I just went from there. Yeah.
And when he started speaking Chinese to you, what was it, just very simple introductions, that kind of thing to start with?
Yeah, we just have a very basic conversation. Like I remember pretty much every day, like we were video calling at the time. We didn't live together. Like he's a friend from sixth form, and I just remember him every day, like that, just really slowly, like, 你早上吃了什么? And I'd be there like, 我今天早上吃了一碗燕麦粥, and I'd be like really, really slow, like robotic Chinese. And then it'd be, and then yeah, we'd do that every day. Poor guy, must have been crazy after that. But yeah.
For how long was that your strategy, and how long every day were you kind of having those conversation sessions with him?
So we'd probably do it like most days actually, and it'd probably be about like half an hour to an hour. I don't know how I managed to, I'm going to be honest, like at that point my Chinese was like, oh, I'm impressed that he managed to like sit it off for a full hour of trying to like get stuff out of me. But yeah, so no, and I think later on I started, like around that time as well, like I'd had a few weeks of that and realised Duolingo didn't really work, and I started using Anki.
And with Anki, how were you kind of using that? Were you using specific decks in terms of learning vocabularies around the HSK exams, or were they decks that you were making yourself? Or
I started just making decks myself. Well, I always have. I haven't actually used any of the pre-made decks, so I can't make any recommendations as to like whether they're useful or not. I'm sure they will be for some people, but yeah, for me, I quite enjoyed making my own, because I could like learn vocabulary that I was interested in and that I was being exposed to daily.
And so you were just come across words that you didn't know from conversation practice with your friend and put them in decks. And when you put them in the decks, did you like include example sentences as well? Or
That's one of the things I regret. Like when I started learning Chinese, like very early on, I wouldn't include example sentences. And I think that was the biggest mistake I made at the beginning, actually. I'd always recommend like what I do now is like close deletions. I just like read out the sentence, like fill in the missing word, and then make a few example sentences like from like I've based off that sentence, I'd like modify it slightly to make more examples with that using the same word, etc. I think that would be a lot better way of doing it rather than just like learning a word and its translation. Like that didn't work very well, because like for example in Chinese, like the word lai is going to get used like thousands of different contexts in like loads of different ways. It's not just like you translate it to come and then you know how to use it like everywhere. So yeah, I definitely recommend, like I'd say don't make the same mistake I did at the beginning. Like do you have some examples on your Anki if you're going to use Anki? Yeah.
At that stage then, so you moved from Duolingo to Anki, presumably you were still keeping up the conversations daily with your friend. That was after kind of a month of you using Duolingo, you transitioned to that. And what was your kind of routine then at that stage daily?
I think I did use Duolingo for, yeah, like a month or two. And then the routine was just like Anki and the friend. Also like listening to podcasts and things, like very basic, and then like YouTube videos as well, like they're like some slower Chinese YouTube videos that I can't really remember off the top of my head like which ones it was, but I just kind of watch them and try and learn from them. And like, but
were they sort of like intended for learners at that point, like
yeah,
beginner?
Yeah, they were in
podcasts.
Yeah intended for I wouldn't have been able to go into like, I think only when I'd studied for like a, I think like 4 or 5 months, I started watching like TV shows and stuff and started learning from them. So yeah, so at that time it was like intended for learners.
So you continued that kind of routine of basically Anki and immersing in content that was intended for learners and conversations daily with your friend, and I guess you kept that up for, was it several months?
Yeah, it's probably until I came to uni. So before I came to uni, it was probably like three, four months roughly. So I kept that up for like a good few months. And then when I came to uni, I just started like making Chinese friends and stuff. And But yeah, it was quite difficult because it was in lockdown. And also around that time, I started watching like my first Chinese TV program, which was like recommended online, which was like Jia You Er Nu. And it's like, so yeah, I think every Chinese learner's watched that with like these really strong like Beijing accents. Like all my friends are like, cool, Will, you're gonna like, you're only gonna be able to know like Beijinghua. You're not gonna be able to speak like standard Mandarin after watching that. But no, but yeah, I found that really useful. That like, because there's just so many like really authentic example sentences. I just throw them in Anki.
Oh, so at that point, you started using example sentences more when you were watching content. I guess one thing I wanted to ask was what. A question that a lot of people have is like, what's the right balance between doing flashcards and immersing in content? So when you were beginning with Anki, what balance did you kind of strike between that and watching videos and having conversations? And then later on, what kind of balance did you have?
Yeah, I think it's really important, this question, because I think if you just did Anki all day, like you wouldn't have any motivation, if I'm honest. I can't do Anki all day. I'll probably do a max of like half an hour. So yeah, at the time, I think I was doing like an hour at most on Anki, because I don't think it'd be effective if you're doing like hours and hours and hours and hours of it, which I have to do for medicine, but not for Chinese. So yeah, I think it's important to find a balance to keep you motivated. And also just because the way I use Anki, I use it to speak to myself, actually. So like I said, I kind of have these closed deletions and I just... I read them out to myself, like fill in the missing words and like make new sentences, like all just speaking to myself. It's like Zianzu, and it's like just keep doing that, and that way I would like help. That would help me think in Chinese and like to get more fluent. When I would, because this way, like I could practice speaking on my own. But one of the things I would say is like at the beginning, if you're spending a lot of time doing that, you're gonna make an awful lot of mistakes and build like a load of quite bad habits from like, because you don't have that native like feedback. Because you don't have a native sat in the room with you when you're doing like your Anki deck. So yeah, I think it is important to strike a balance. I think like for me personally, it'd probably be like at the most like an hour or so on Anki a day. But yeah,
is that now or back then as well?
That's back then as well. Yeah, I'd try and spend more time with like just with my friends and stuff.
One thing I wanted to ask before we move on is to talk about something else that I know was very important to you from close to the beginning, which was tones. Because when anybody watches you speak Chinese, what's very clear is not just that like you speak with good tones, but also that kind of mastered the art of like speaking quickly with tones and fluently with tones, which is a transition that a lot of people find difficult. But at the beginning, what was your approach to tones?
It was just a lot of copying. I'd every time I learned a word, like this is another like thing I'd definitely say as a beginner, like every time I'd put a new word in my Anki or learn a new word, I would learn like the pinyin and I'd learn the tones. Like I'd learn like what tone it is and I'd copy it again and again. Like I'd have an audio file on the Anki card, so I could just copy it.
At some point before that, did you kind of obviously sit down and learn the theory of how tones work? There's four of them plus a neutral tone and all that kind of thing. So you got that all kind of locked down, and presumably you practiced them in isolation first to make sure that you could do it properly and practice with a native speaker, or?
No, I'd say that is definitely a good idea and I'd highly recommend that. Yeah,
but you kind of just tried to imitate as best as you could.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the problems I had is like my friends that I had at the time, like he isn't a native speaker. Like he learned Chinese because his like parents will speak Cantonese, so he learned Chinese like in a Chinese school as like an English native speaker. So yeah, so his tones weren't like at the time. His tones are like really good now, but at the time, like because he hadn't spoken Chinese in ages, his tones weren't perfect either. So I couldn't really like do it with him. So I kind of just sat down and I'd have like the native audio and just repeat it. And I just every time I did the Anki flashcard, I'd just copy it. And that's kind of the way I learned tones. And then afterwards, it was just I'd do a lot of shadowing, etc.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because everybody I've interviewed who had the easiest time with tones, not necessarily like the the most successful case studies in terms of tones, but the easiest ride in terms of getting to really high level with tones is are people who, like you, took them seriously from the beginning. Because I think what's like, I think the difficulty with tones, I think tones are not difficult in themselves. What's difficult is changing our habits, our mental habits. And like at the beginning, we're not in the mental habit of paying attention to the tone for each word. So what I found was when I first started like paying close attention to tones, which in my case was only a year ago, I found it quite difficult. I found it a lot more difficult to recall in my head the tone for a word and compared to being able to recall like other aspects of the pronunciation. And what I found was that after getting into a bit of a habit, after a while, I got to a stage where actually it was no more difficult to recall the tone than any other aspect of the pronunciation. It was just another aspect of the pronunciation. So I guess if you do that from the beginning, you can get into that habit really quickly, and that's probably the ideal way. I guess would you sort of agree with that?
No, definitely. I think that's the way to go. I think if you do it from the beginning, like one of the advantages I found is like as you get to a bit of a higher level, like when you learn new words, so you don't like you have the tone there, but I don't necessarily memorize the tone. I just memorize how it sounds in my head and how I've seen it like pronounced. And then like if you ask me what tone it is, like I'll be able to like listen to it and I'll tell you, but it's like I don't necessarily have to memorize the tone because I've like the tones are like I've kind of it's already in my subconscious like from just doing it so much. But I'd also say like if you're struggling with tones, like don't beat yourself up about it. Like even now, like being able to speak at like a decent level to be able to communicate like every day in fluent Chinese, I make mistakes all the time. Like I regularly make some really bad tone mistakes if I'm not like paying attention and I just speak really quickly. So yeah, but I definitely, it is worth investing time in tones. Like some people will be like, oh, don't bother. But if you do, like you will have some really embarrassing situations where people can't understand you or you say something really rude by accident because your tones are wrong. So I think it is important, especially if you want to get like a good accent as well, because the one, like one of the main things that people will be able to tell if you're a foreigner or not straight away from like the way you sound is just from your tones.
One thing I wondered was throughout the process in the initial stages that you've just talked us through and then later as well, how important has like feedback from native speakers been, particularly on the pronunciation? Has that been a factor?
For me, it has been really, really important, like feedback. So what I would do is every time I made a mistake when I was speaking to my friends or whatever, I'd try my best to like kind of write it down or whatever and like put the correct way of saying it into Anki. So if I've said something that's like really sounds really English in Chinese, then I'd be like, oh, hang on, I should express it in this way. Like my friends would correct it and I would memorize it. And that's kind of like having that repeated cycle would mean that like my mistakes, like in terms of making grammar mistakes or whatever, become a bit less as just like time went on. And I think for pronunciation as well, like my friends will always like, even now, like if I make a mistake, they're like, they'll take the mic out of me like, oh, well, what's that? What? Are you sure that's third tone or whatever? It's like,
but I think what you said was really important. It's like recording down the mistakes. This is something that I found, because I think being corrected is one thing, being told that you've made a pronunciation mistake or a grammar mistake is one thing. But what I always found is whenever I had this situation, either with a friend or with a tutor, they'd correct me and then like the lesson would end and I would completely forget it, unless you find like a system for recording it. In my case, the one that I came up with and that I use now is basically when I meet with my tutor 3 times a week, what we do is we'll talk freely, and then every time I make a mistake, she will correct me. I'll write down the correction and then we'll spend the last part of the lesson using the corrections to come up with like a story in like completely correct native Chinese, and then she will record her voice saying it, and then like I'll listen to it 100 times, and then like those kind of correct phrases and structures will just get embedded in my head. And I found that like quite useful. But I think whichever way you use, I think it's really important just to remember not just to be corrected, but to find a system for recording, whether that's Anki, whether that's the system that I just mentioned.
Definitely. No, I think that's a really good point to make. I think it's all like well and good having someone correct you, but if you're not gonna like learn from it, then that mistake's gonna happen again and again and again until you like take the time to go and like fix it, I guess. And the way to fix it is just to like learn the proper way of saying what you're trying to say. So yeah, I think it's definitely, like you said, having a good system, whether that is Anki, whether it's listening to it 100 times by a native speaker, like whatever works for you, I think it's really important. to try and like learn from our mistakes, to try and sound better and like to communicate better.
In terms of like comprehension then, we got to the point earlier where you just told us that you had been studying for about 6 months. You started watching Chinese shows on Netflix and on wherever you were watching them, you know. What point did you kind of feel that in terms of comprehension, you were getting to a point where you were quite comfortable following along with the plot of whatever you're watching and in conversations with friends?
So with conversations with friends, it really depends what you're talking about. So I think it's only really now where I can be like, sure, like I'm going to understand, no matter like what we're talking about, it'd be like 90 plus percent or like maybe 95, or like even if it's the right topic, then like 100. But it's like, yeah, I think when I first started watching TV shows, I mean, I'll probably be looking at like 50%, 60% maybe at a push. Because, yeah, it's just quite hard to, like, to transition from going from learner material to then you've suddenly got someone like speaking full pace with no English subtitles, and then in like a thick Beijing accent. And then, yeah, so that did. But once I got used to that, like, it really helped me. It was really good for like getting used to the speed of Chinese. Like, otherwise you're just making native speakers speak to you like at really slow pace, which can be embarrassing. So yeah, I think that did help. But yeah, it was probably starting off about 50%, 60%, and it gradually increased as I watch more TV, like learn new words. I think the two parts of like comprehension in terms of listening, well, and for reading, I guess, is just learning new vocabulary and just listening more. I think there's like, once you nail those two parts and your vocabulary is big enough, then you just, most stuff you'll be able to guess the context, even if you don't know the words. So that's what I do now. Like, I still won't understand 100% of like what my friends are saying if they start throwing in some like Chong Yu or whatever to like wind me up, and but I can guess from like the context.
I think that's the important thing, is getting your comprehension up to a high enough level that you're able to guess the bits that you don't know through context. And that is quite a high level that you need to get to of comprehension in terms of percentage, like in order to be able to do that, because otherwise like the odd word here and there can completely throw you off, kind of thing.
Can throw you off, yeah. And I think it's just a case of having a habit of like learning vocabulary every day, like getting your vocabulary to like, you want to be knowing to like to get to a level where you are at that point. Like I'd say it's probably at least three, I don't know from your experience, but I'd say probably for me at least like 3,000 commonly used words to be able to get to like a level where like you can guess. Because otherwise, like now I can, like there'll still be times when I can't, like if it's a really weird word or whatever. So yeah, I think it's just having that habit and not being afraid of, like, if you don't understand, that's okay. And just doing your best to try and guess where you can.
Absolutely. And the comprehension challenge, like, endures for a long, long, long time. I mean, like, in my case, like, at the moment, like, in terms of vocabulary, I've, like, I know all of HSK6, but that doesn't mean that if I, like, switch on the news, that I'm going to understand it fluently. Because, like, the other thing to mention about Chinese is that, like, different forms of the language are so different from each other. So like just conversational Chinese is almost like a different dialect, you could say, to the news when you watch that. Like, and so, yeah, it's kind of, it takes a long time before someone gets to the point where they can rival a native speaker for comprehension skills, I think, in terms of that level. I was just going to ask, between that time when you kind of started watching native material and increasingly began getting comfortable with that, then at the kind of between the 6 month mark when you started doing that and the year mark when you recorded the first video that I saw you do on YouTube, which is on your YouTube channel, in that period, like what I'm getting from you is that you kind of had something in place in terms of some formal study, which was like maybe doing Anki, which you were committed to doing on a daily basis. And then kind of a large component of it, what seems to be that you had a social life that was built around Chinese friends, is that right?
Definitely, yeah. I did make like, so at the time, like it was still lockdown. So, and there was a lot of Chinese students that are kind of like stranded in the UK with no friends. And it made it quite easy for me to make new friends quite fast with them. Like it wasn't on purpose as such. Like at times it was, but like later on it did become part of my social life. I think it's important to have a balance between like Chinese friends and English friends. Don't take me wrong. Like don't just have Chinese friends. For the sake of learning Chinese, I don't think that's the way to go. But yeah, no, I did make it, and I found it really useful, and my friends were really willing to help me. So I think like having a social life where I could use Chinese was great. So it meant that kind of my study routine at the time looked like I was studying full time for like medicine. So it was quite difficult, but I'd probably do like an hour of Anki in the morning or half an hour, just depending on how many cards I had to do that day, like based on the system it uses. And I probably watched like 20-minute like episode of TV in the evening, like before I went to bed. So at the time, I think it was still like Jiayou, and then once I got a bit better, I could actually watch other things that were more interesting. But yeah, and then it was just like when I had time and when my friends had time, we'd all just meet up, and just like I went to a lot of like parties with Chinese people and stuff. Yeah, we just met up for walks and things, and then became really close friends from that.
I think this is something that's really crucial that you've just mentioned, because a language like Chinese, the brain needs to be convinced that this is something it needs to learn. And it's not just the kind of conscious side of the brain, like somebody thinking, I really want to learn Chinese in a conscious way. It's also the subconscious part of the brain needs to be convinced that it's going to expend, there's a real need for it to expend the energy to make this happen. And I think the only way you can really trick the brain, if that's the right word, into doing that is to kind of really establish close friendships and relationships in Chinese.
Yeah, and I think when you were talking about this as well, one of the things I've realized is like if you're using a language to experience like make memories and experience like emotions that you'd experience in English, like you just learn it a lot faster. Like you want to try and use Chinese to experience everything you would in English as well. So that includes your social life, that includes like your studying, etc. That includes like the music you listen to. And as you start to do that and immerse yourself and like experience those emotions and then make those memories, and it becomes part of you.
One thing I wanted to briefly touch on as well is a topic that I discussed previously with previous guest Matt versus Japan. Matt versus Japan, we talked about in that podcast the similarities between learning Chinese and Japanese in terms of the fact that Japanese has pitch accent and Chinese has tones. And Matt versus Japan, he kind of neglected pitch accent at first in a similar way to the way I neglected tones and then had to go back and relearn them. And one thing that we have in common, both of us, is that we've both got to a point where we can speak with, in my case, tonal accuracy, and he can speak with pitch accent. And in his case, he's extremely fluent in Japanese. I'm not going to compare my level of Chinese to that. There's something present in both cases with both Matt and I, which is what Stephen Krashen might refer to as the monitor, which is that whenever we're going to say something, there's part of our like semi-conscious brain, which is monitoring everything we're going to say just to make sure there's no mistakes. And it's not completely free in the way that I'm completely free right now when I'm speaking English. I'm not at all aware of like the pronunciation of any of the rules that are going behind what I'm saying of anything like that. I'm not remotely worried I might make any mistakes. When I speak Chinese, there is to some degree that is still there, and it kind of affects my fluency slightly. It kind of affects my freedom to speak. But I feel when you speak Chinese, you're very, very fluid. So I wonder whether you've kind of managed to get over that, or whether you still feel there's to some degree a monitor involved in monitoring the pronunciation and the structure of your Chinese when you speak.
I think that's a really interesting question, and I would say I still do have a monitor in place. I would say like Chinese, like for sometimes it can feel quite similar to my English if it's something that I'm comfortable enough talking about, and it's the like vocabulary that I've probably learned like 2 years ago rather than like just today, then maybe it can like it's not going to feel like exactly like English, but it can feel close to it sometimes. But most of the time, I do still have like a bit of a monitor, like you said. You're always thinking like, am I going to say this like wrong or whatever? But I think one of the things I've been trying to do like all throughout my journey, like learning Chinese, and I still do now, is just trying to not be scared of making mistakes. Like if you say something wrong, it's fine. Like I'm going to be honest with Chinese people, they're such lovely people, and they're so like even if you can only speak like a few words of Chinese, they're so like willing to praise you and like encourage you and help you on your journey that you just don't need to be afraid. It's mistake like making mistakes is part of the journey, and you're gonna do it. Everyone does. Like we do in English now. Like if I'll be honest, I haven't spoken much English today, and I feel like my English now is appalling. It's you just you know you do make mistakes, So I think just trying to convince yourself and switch your mindset to a mindset of it's okay to make mistakes, and then just like spending more time with native speakers so that you gradually get closer to what they sound like and like they can correct you, etc. And having that like feedback loop in place, and then just loads of input, and then you just get over it gradually. But I'm still not there. I'm still not at the point where I can just speak Chinese like I am with English and not worry about it.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And I think the key point is the thing that I think a lot of people find difficult is that switch, because it's that paradox between you've just you it's necessary to some extent to when you're first learning the language and for the first long while to kind of care about things like tones and really think about them and that kind of thing and make sure that you've got like a foundation in place. And then the difficulty is to like kind of switch from that to where you're not worried at all. And I'm kind of like really working hard on that at the moment. Like with my Chinese friends, I'm like, I kind of have designated times for both. Like sometimes with my tutor, I'm like, I tell her like, you're like, at this point, you're like in complete correction mode. Just correct everything that I say wrong and like, we'll record it down. And other times I'm like, this is the time to just like speak completely freely. Don't correct me on anything. We're just like practicing fluency. But I really think that second part is super important because a lot of when you hear a lot of foreigners speak, it doesn't matter the language, but particularly in Chinese, like it's getting over that hurdle of like speaking with just tonal accuracy, but sounding a bit like a robot to like just speaking freely, which is, I think, the psychological hurdle that a lot of people find difficult to jump.
It's really easy to sound like a robot when you speak Chinese. I did for ages. If you just worry about what you're saying, then it just does become like that. And I think it's also a case of just practicing speaking more. Like the more you speak, the more you get used to like the way you're sounding, and you can still pay attention to things and like do things to correct your mistakes. Like for example, shadowing to sort out your accent, like practice your tones, get feedback, put it in Anki or listen to it again and again, like wouldn't like the things we've talked about. But at the same time, it's just practicing getting like you said, getting fluent. It's just you just want to be practicing speaking so much that you think in Chinese, and you don't have to think too much about what you're saying. You just open your mouth and it comes out naturally. And that's kind of the goal.
You mentioned shadowing. Is
Yeah.
that some a technique that you've used?
When I was more committed, yeah. When I had more time to study Chinese, I did like using shadowing. Yeah, when I would listen to like podcasts or like watch TV shows, etc. I'd kind of well, every now and then I'd follow along, and as I said with my Anki, like there'd always be audio recordings or maybe sentences or maybe like just a couple of like characters, and just shadowing or like practicing copying it, imitating it, just to try and refine my accent.
When I hear you speaking about like your experience of learning Chinese, I wonder whether or not you have the sense that like your story here is just it's just miles away from like the typical story of somebody who like took up Chinese during lockdown. Like it doesn't normally pan out this way. Is that something that you're sort of aware
Yeah.
of?
I do think my story's a bit weird. Like most of the people I know that like that speak Chinese or whatever, that are foreigners, they've usually like either studied an A level in Chinese and went to do it at uni or whatever, and then stayed in China. Or like those are kind of classic stories, aren't they? Or you see someone like for example, people that have come to uni like not knowing any Chinese and then studied a few years, maybe made some Chinese friends and like slowly got better, etc. And those are awesome stories, but yeah, for whatever reason, I'm just a bit different. I don't know how I managed to like kind of stick with that habit. I think now that we've spoken about mentioned habit, like yeah, I think the good thing that like worked out for me for having like lockdown, etc., was that I was able to embed that as a habit in my life, just waking up and doing the Chinese and getting on with it. Which I probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to do if I just come straight into like med school. I'd like had a great summer, like having fun with friends, etc. Like I probably wouldn't have done
Absolutely.
that.
When I send your clips of you speaking and videos of you speaking online to, as I have done to, some really truly elite language learners, and native speakers as well, their response is always the same. They're just sort of like, "This is nuts." 1 year and a half to get to this level is incredible. And one thing I was wondering is, everybody who learns Chinese, they learn to like mispronounce "ni hao," and they will get told by Chinese people, "Your Chinese is incredible." Like everyone gets that. So what kind of reaction must you get? And when you tell your story, like what do they say when you tell them about your story, how long you've been learning?
So a lot, some people, like, if they don't look at me too closely, they'll like, they would think maybe I'm mixed race. I've had that a few times. I've had had a few, like, did you grow up in China? I've had that a few times. But no, like, most of the time people are just really shocked and just like assume that I've like lived in China for a while or something. But yeah, so no, we do get some interesting reactions. It's probably not quite as much like as exaggerated as the ones we see on YouTube and stuff, but the Chinese people do tend to be quite shocked, like if you can speak Chinese to them.
Have you thought of making any of those style videos?
No, I think I could do it. The problem is, like, I'm probably like I might, I think I'd probably like, I think there's rumors going around about me in Manchester in the Chinese
Oh,
community,
really?
so I get far. Yeah, I remember, like, in some of like the more Chinese based accommodation, like I'd hear people like kind of whisper, like, is that the guy that can speak Chinese? Like, I can understand you, but I'm not gonna say anything, kind of. But yeah, I don't know, maybe I could consider it, but it's not, I'm actually quite like quite shy in that sense. I don't think I could do
I
it.
wanted to ask as well, as a final question, do you think that your
What?
method and all the techniques that you've used that we've been talking about, do you think that these can be used by others to replicate your success, or was your situation too particular, were your circumstances too unique to be able to be replicated by others? How do you feel about that?
I think you can use what I've done to some extent, but I don't think everyone's situation's different, and it's not everyone that can just come to Manchester and like manage, just by coincidence, manage to meet that many Chinese people and have so many friends and then like that are all Chinese and then be able to like immerse myself completely. So it's not everyone that can do that. So, but I think like just having the few things that we've talked about that I think are really important is like practicing your pronunciation consistently, like having shadowing or practicing your tones, like that, I think everyone can take away. And I think having a system to learn vocabulary as well, like I know some people will just do that from like massive input. If that's for you, then that's fine. Like I think input's good. Like I'm not gonna say anything bad about that. But for me, obviously, that was Anki and like lots of speaking to myself to like embed it in my brain. So just having vocabulary, we've spoken about pronunciation, and an input as well. Yeah, just listening a lot. Just to be able to like keep up and like train your listening comprehension, and then still just try and get a lot of input, make it part of your life. And it's just a, I think one final point as well is like, sorry, no, first I'll go with like make friends if you can. I know it's difficult. Like I can recommend, like I'd say, for example, use Tandem, like or like other language exchange apps if you can't have like do it in person. Like there's loads of people like. In China, it's got so many people that want to learn English. Like, if you can do a half an hour exchange session with them, like 15 minutes English, 15 minutes Chinese, something like that, that's a way around like the no friends that speak Chinese problem.
No, but that makes total sense. And I think what I would add is to anybody listening is that I think that it's probably safe to say that the time frame in which you've done this is probably unrealistic for the vast majority of people. I mean, it's just kind of off the scale in
Yes.
terms of anything I've personally ever heard of before. And I think it's important to say that just because, like, what tends to happen is that these cases like yours, which are slight outliers, will tend to dominate social media, and then other people will kind of feel bad because it's taken them so much longer. And I think that's important to say. But having said that, everything you said today has been really important to hear as well, in terms of there are certain techniques that you've used, there are certain principles involved, like, for example, having a really strong foundation from the beginning, having solid feedback from native speakers from the beginning, taking tones really seriously from the beginning, and throughout the whole process, immersing both in co native content, but also establishing really close friendships and relationships with Chinese people. I think all these principles are really crucial in terms of as a catalyst for learning Chinese, and will make speed up anybody's language learning. So it's been really great to have you on the podcast. So thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you so much for that. No, it's been awesome to speak to you. And I think just to reinforce what you've said there about the time frame thing, like I have had a few comments on YouTube that have been like saying that I'm pretending or whatever, or like saying, oh, this is like, oh, this guy's just blatantly lying, or like, and then other people have been more like, oh, I'm really disappointed like with my own progress. Like I would say like I'm a bit of an exception just because of the way things have panned out with like the friends that I've got and the amazing support I've got in Manchester. So please don't be like discouraged by this, and I just really hope that I can help like from the points that I've given. But yeah, everyone has their own learning journey, and like everyone's time frame is different based on a lot of different factors. So please don't be discouraged. But even so, I do think people can like learn languages in a short period of time. It can be done.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter. Run by me and my friend Will Hart, we share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.